This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
To learn Muslim advocacy for Palestinian rights and the refutations against the arguments of the Zionist movement, I'll be teaching a 10-week course at the Quran Institute for online and on-site students on Palestine advocacy. The 10-week course will consist of 30 hours of lesson time and an almost equal amount of tutorial time that will go in-depth into the history of Palestine, its peoples throughout history, the Zionist movement, arguments and justifications they use, the plight of the Palestinians as a result of Zionism, both in history and today, and understanding the solutions for the occupation of Palestine. For all those who want to seriously challenge what is going on in Palestine and make our campaign to bring international pressure to bear upon Israel, as what happened to South Africa, we need to equip ourselves with powerful knowledge about the history of Palestine and know how to counter Zionist arguments indisputably. So join me on the 10-week course and raise the bar on Muslim advocacy for justice and the rights of our oppressed brothers and sisters in Palestine. Register at thequran.institute/Palestine.
Israel is just another case study in the crimes of nationalism, or the consequences of nationalism, or crime as well, you could say, in that it is a nation state exclusively for one racial group. Doesn't mean that it excludes other racial groups, but the nation state only represents one particular group, which is usually facilitated by a hopeful majority of that particular group. So now to go back to the founders of Zionism, as you mentioned them. Theodor Herzl basically didn't really give much regard to the natives of Palestine, didn't give much regard to how they're going. What about their aspirations? What about their representation in government? What about government for them? So first, yes, he tried to ask the Ottoman Caliph if they could sell the land to the Zionists. And of course, he said no. But nationalism doesn't just say, oh, well, okay, then fair dues, we'll accept that. No, nationalism says we need to try other strategies because the ends justifies the means if it is necessary for the national interest. If it is necessary for the national interest. And so they looked at other avenues, and Britain was a very willing avenue, especially the money and the support, and it was also advantageous for Britain at the time. Balfour gave an introduction to a book on the history of Zionism. So he was certainly a solid supporter of Zionism. And here's what Theodor Herzl described what this new state would be. He described it as not even just a nation state for Jews where they can reside in peace and security, but also as, and I'm going to quote him here, it would form a portion of a rampart of Europe against Asia, an outpost of civilization as opposed to barbarism. We should, as a neutral state, remain in contact with all of Europe, which would have to guarantee our existence. So, in a way, Theodor Herzl is refuting you in many senses, because he's saying himself that, in a way, Israel's existence will be supported and dependent upon guarantees by, at that time, Europe. He didn't envision America at the time would step in to be the main guarantor of Israel's existence. And if your definition of colonialism, but not settler colonialism, by the way, if your definition of colonialism is support by a metropole, of which is dependent upon, well, the British very much did provide that. If you think that that the colonies in South Africa or the colonies of the pilgrims, of the Puritan pilgrims in Pennsylvania were colonialism, were settler colonies, these were established mainly at the resources of private individuals, of course, with the permission of the various governments, or the Dutch East India Company, which were private corporations establishing these colonies. And we have no problem calling them settler colonies, but suddenly we have a problem with calling the Zionist project, which was established with international banking institutions, organizations that were called colonization organizations, with no regard to the natives. Why should that be different? And I'm going to quote you something, and then I'll let you kind of come back very briefly. So he said, the idea of colonization of Palestine is, moreover, connected with the remarkable colonizing impetus which has taken hold of the entire modern world. And judged by outward characteristics, are the European migrations to foreign lands, their colonization and development. So very different from this feature of Jewish aspiration. So is this very different from the feature of Jewish aspirations? He's saying, he has a question mark there. exuberant energy finds no appropriate outlet in Europe, and so seek it far away where it may be usefully employed for the furthering of civilization in the midst of backward countries and nations. Fruitful Jewish energy, which is being kept under in the diaspora, will be gathered and transplanted to Palestine that it may prove true to itself and to the whole of civilization. So they describe themselves as settler colonists. They use the terminology, and they even compared their aspirations to the European colonization project. I said, are we so different to them? As a positive thing, because everyone was doing it at the time. They said, why don't we get a piece of the action? Why can't we do exactly the same thing? So that would be my main rebuttal to it. And as I said, written by an academic on settler colonialism, which I only summarized it for you, but people can please refer to it, called Settler Colonialism, A Theoretical Overview. He talks about settler colonialism being where a group of people who they carry their sovereignty with them, and they basically take over the sovereignty of a land which might have other people, which can involve, and most likely usually does involve, the transplantation or the exiting of those people. And to kind of finish up, I also mentioned Theodor Herzl wrote in his diary on the 12th of June, 1895. He said, regarding lands, he said, when we occupy the lands in Palestine, we shall bring forth immediate benefits to the state that receives us. We must expropriate gently the private property on the estates assigned to us. We shall try to spirit the penniless population across the border by procuring employment for it in transit countries while denying it any employment in our country. Okay, so he basically said that, even though he didn't talk about forced expulsion, but he talked about a type of expropriation of the property in the lands of the people within the lands which are appropriate, which are given to them by whichever power, of course, and the spiriting away. So putting the penniless population, which already exists there, finding ways to get them to other places, move them other places, which he hoped by the carrot, you know, not by the stick, but by the carrot, which is try to get employment for them in other countries. And this was also replicated by this sentiment was also mentioned by
many of the earliest, the late Zionist founders, who talked about
finding employment for landless Arabs, which were being created due to the Zionist colonization, and denying them employment back in Palestine. So they couldn't find any employment back in Palestine, and only available employment would be outside of Palestine, and then they can leave Palestine. So that would be that point. So basically, it's settler colonialism. Transfer the population, although at the beginning it was only envisioned by the carrot, not by the stick. They compared themselves to other colonial projects, many settler colonial projects, which we would have no problem calling settler colonialism, like the Puritans in Pennsylvania setting up their colony under British charter. They didn't use any soldiers from the crown to do so. The Dutch East India Company in South Africa, they didn't use state soldiers to do so, to take over colonialism land. It was a private venture by themselves, but they had permission from their government. How is Zionism, who used permission from whichever government controls the land or has the land, believes it has sovereignty over the land, to take that land from its inhabitants, i.e. from by creating a sovereignty which is not the sovereignty of its inhabitants but the sovereignty of those who are coming into it? How is that different to settler colonialism? If it looks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, and the duck says it's a duck, well, then it's a duck.
Now, you then went on to Herzl. To begin with, the quotes that you brought, Abdullah, were actually talking about Argentina. And he actually, if you read his diaries, when he talks about the promised land, he says the promised land is within us. It's the ability for us to create a state to escape its realm. The 9th of June, 1895, this is what he says in his diary. Again, the diary that you've read. In Palestine's disfavor, is its proximity to Russia and Europe, its lack of room for expansion, as well as its climate, which we are no longer accustomed to, because we're obviously speaking as a European Jew from a pretty cold climate. In its favor is the mighty legend. Obviously, for him, he's not a religious person, and he sees the connection of the Jews to the land as some mighty legend. Obviously, we have archaeology in the lakes today, and when most people wouldn't describe it as a mighty legend. But yeah, what he's effectively saying is our strong connection to this place. And so what we see from here is when Herzl's writing to himself, and this is why he favors Argentina, which is going to lead into the next point. But when he's writing to himself, he's honest, and he does it. His concern with Palestine is it's close to the Europeans and the Russians. He doesn't want to be in that mix. He doesn't want to be in the mix of the Ottomans. That's crazy for him. He wants to be in the new world where he's safe, where the Jews won't have to worry about these superpowers that will oppress them like they have done since the Jews were exiled 2,000 years ago. And so his own thoughts to himself are much more telling than his buttering up of nobles around the world. He tells powerful people what powerful people want to hear. So then you mentioned a very famous quote. And what, again, you failed to mention was he's not talking about Palestine. He's talking about Argentina. And it was the penniless quote. And so let me read the entire passage and then explain what it says. So when we occupy the, so again, this is 12th of June, 1895. When we occupy the land, we shall bring immediate, and he's talking about Argentina here. We shall bring immediate benefits to the state that receives us. We must expropriate gently the private property on the estates assigned to us. So he's already saying this is land that has been assigned to us, not coming in by force. We shall try to spirit the penniless population across the border. So this was written 10 years before. He goes on to say about the penniless population in Egypt and in Jerusalem, that this is 10 years before that, where he clearly does not want to do that. He clearly talks about helping the impoverished, what they describe as natives in that day, but the Arabs who are living on land. We shall try to spirit away the penniless population across the border by procuring employment for it in the transit countries. So nothing about expulsion. It's like we're going to help them by giving them work in other countries, which will be better for them. This is Herzl speaking, not me. Oh, there's a sentiment of Herzl. While denying it any employment in our own country, because he wants to build up a Jewish state where Jews have autonomy, which they don't have in Europe, the property owners will come over to our side. Both the process of expropriation and the removal of the poor must be carried out discreetly and circumspectly. So then he goes on to say, it goes without saying that we shall respectfully tolerate persons of other faiths and protect their property, their honor and their freedom with the harshest means of coercion. So here he's saying, if there are landowners, if there are not the penniless beggars, but the people who actually own the land, they will be completely protected in this state. And those penniless beggars that don't want to go, they'll still be protected in Herzl's state that is never realized, because Herzl sadly died long before this vision of a Jewish sovereignty came to fruition. At first, incidentally, people will avoid us. We are a bad odor. By the time the reshaping of world opinion in our favor has been completed, we shall be firmly established in our country, no longer fearing the influx of foreigners and receiving our visitors with aristocratic benevolence and proud amiability. Should there be any such immovable owners in individual areas who would not sell their property to us, we shall simply leave them there and develop our commerce in the direction of other areas which belong to us. If we move in, and so it goes on and on and on, but effectively, he's not talking about Palestine. He's talking about Argentina. He's talking about people who don't own the land. He's talking about people who live on the land, who are penniless, and he's saying we can help them get employment elsewhere.
Let's go back to what you said about Theodor Herzl. So Theodor Herzl's diary quote was written in the summer of 1895. At that point, he actually hadn't decided whether it was going to be Palestine or Argentina. So he didn't reference any particular country. So when you said that he was referring to Argentina, that's not exactly true, right? And you know, he didn't actually mention any particular. He hadn't decided at that point whether it was going to be Argentina or Palestine. But you missed the point of the entire quote, which is he might have. Even if I was to concede it was Argentina, even if I was to give you that, he's still outlining what he intends to do to any place. He wants to colonize somewhere, right? The question is where. Where's the target? Zionism wouldn't be any less settler colonialist just because it targets Argentina. Okay, so it's a moot point. So you're basically arguing that, well, you know, he was going to settle colonize someplace, but he hadn't decided it was Palestine at that point. It was like, well, all right, but that still doesn't change the point that Zionism is settler colonialism. So that needs to be really addressed.
If you enjoyed the arguments presented in the debate and want to know more and learn how to debate, discuss, and advocate for Palestine yourself, register now for the Palestine Advocacy Course and raise the bar in Muslim argument and activism. Please follow this link. The link is also available in the description.